Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
This podcast of NPR's On Point with Tom Ashbrook is a production of WBUR Boston.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. For 10 years, they've been in the minority party wilderness, divided, mocked, sideswiped in the 2000 presidential election, and whipped in 2004. And now the Democrats are dreaming comeback. In a decade on top, the GOP has driven the country into huge deficits, an ugly war, and a spreading swamp of corruption charges. The president's poll numbers are lousy. Top dog Tom DeLay is headed out. Republicans are feuding over immigration and spending. The Democrats suddenly look like the party of unity, but can they win again? Do they have the right stuff? Up next on Point, as the GOP struggles, we lift the hood and take a look at the Democrats. Joining me from Berkeley, California, is Marcos Melitzas. He's founder of Daily Kos, which is read by almost a million people every day for its influential take on American politics. He's part journalist, part activist, a big new wave mover and shaker, along with Jerome Armstrong. He's written a new book, Crashing the Gate, Netroots, Grassroots, and the Rise of People-Powered Politics. Marcos Melitzas, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Tom. It's great to be on.
Also with us from Washington, D.C. is Democratic political strategist Donna Brazile. She was the first African-American to direct a presidential campaign when she took the reins of the Gore-Lieberman campaign in 2000. She consulted on both of Bill Clinton's presidential campaigns and campaigned for Jimmy Carter, Jesse Jackson, and Dick Gephardt. She's chair of the Democratic National Committee's Voting Rights Institute and teaches at Georgetown University. Donna Brazile, wonderful to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tom. And hello, Marcos. Never heard your voice, but I'm one of your fans.
There you go. From the net to the broadcast voice. Marcos, first to you. You say it right off the bat in your book. We have a Republican Party that can't govern, a Democratic Party that can't get elected. Is that true still with everything that's going on?
Absolutely. It's pretty amazing seeing just how what kind of advantages Democrats have on the issues when you see the polling. And fact is that even though those advantages are there on the issues, even though Republicans are absolutely self-destructing and have proven without a doubt that they cannot govern, fact is that we maybe might take back one of the branches of Congress, the Senate or the House. There is no guarantees. And I think if we had a competent Democratic Party, if we had a party that actually had the infrastructure to support it, this would be a no-brainer of an election. But as it is, Republicans have such structural advantages that I think the elections in November are a big question mark.
Well, we'll look at that. Donna Brazile, how about you? Democrats need to gain 15 seats to take the majority in the House, 6 to take it in the Senate. What are their odds? Can they win?
I do believe we can. Look, there are a lot of things now that are really in our favor, despite the fact that we don't have the type of national leadership and stature that would automatically give us a platform to talk about our ideas and to go out there and rally the American people. The American people are tired of inside the Beltway politics. They're tired of the Republican-controlled Congress. They're tired of this president and everyone else misleading them. So I think this is an opportunity for Democrats to take advantage of not just the Republican disarray, but also we have great candidates running across the country for many of these congressional seats that are open. Some seats are competitive. I do believe this will be a Democratic year, and if we fail to capitalize on the Republican mistakes, then shame on us, and perhaps the American people will finally tell the Democratic Party what many of us have said a long time ago. If we don't stand for something, they will not stand up and vote for us in November.
Marcos, let me put that to you. Donna Brazile says shame on the Democrats if they can't pull it off this year with all the woe that's out there on the Republican plate. But you're still saying there's a great big question mark over these elections in the fall. Take us into why you think that's the case.
As I travel around the country, I've been talking to a lot of people, and I'm realizing that there is very clearly disenchantment for the Republican Party. People have no faith in the Republican Party anymore. But what I'm also seeing is that people say, why should I vote for the Democrats? They don't make clear how they're going to be different than the Republicans. They're not standing tall. They're not giving the American people a clear distinction between them and the Republicans. And given that the fact that the Democrats have actually broken a lot of hearts the last three election cycles in 2002, 2000, and 2006, people are really disenchanted. They don't feel like voting. They don't feel like becoming invested in the election anymore. So people are talking about really low Republican turnout. I'm seeing really low Democratic turnout, and I think that's been borne out by a lot of the special elections and primaries we've seen so far this year.
Here's the big issue, and you write in the book, without ideas, we have nothing. Yet you've written a whole book, and you say this isn't a book about policies or new ideas or message. So where are you?
Well, the problem that we have as a progressive movement is that we don't have the infrastructure to support the ideas. The right wing spends hundreds of millions of dollars a year on think tanks that develop the ideas and convert them into a governing blueprint. They have a media machine to market those ideas to the American people. And this is Fox News and Rush Limbaugh and the AM radio and the 700 Club and Washington Times and so on. And they have a very effective and modernized party machinery and consultant class, the Karl Roves, that can sell those ideas on election day. We don't have any of that. It's actually quite, kind of bleak. So what we saw when Jerome and I started writing our book is that we could have the absolute best ideas in the world. We could have the message to end all messages, but without the ability to really develop that message, to market that message, and to sell that message, it really won't go anywhere. So we had to take a step back and say, before we even get to the message, we need to start working on our infrastructure.
But does that really work that way? I mean, weren't the Republicans, haven't they for decades now, been riding a very central kind of core set of ideas? I ask you about ideas, and you respond, infrastructure. Isn't that part of the Democrats' problem? I mean, Republicans say, small government, lower taxes. What's the Democrat idea?
Well, you know, it's hard to talk about the Republican idea without realizing that it has had this incredible machine to back it up. Back from starting in 1964 in the heels of the Barry Goldwater disaster, the Republicans set out to build this incredible machine. They spent billions of dollars on these think tanks and media outlets to deliver that message. So we can talk all we want about message. My focus right now at this point is to help build the infrastructure that will allow that message to be delivered and marketed to the American people. So we can talk about the message. We can talk about fairness and opportunity and very, very core Democratic ideas. I mean, we don't lack the ideas. We lack the ability to market it to the American people.
Donna, how about it? The Democrats have been losing and losing. Is it the machine to get the message out, or is it the soul of the machine, the ideas themselves?
Well, it's a little bit of both. And let me just say that he's absolutely right. I've probably been on the playing field much longer than most people. I started working in campaigns when I was 9 years old, and I've been involved in so many I can't even think anymore about the next campaign. But look, the Republicans have an incredible movement. They don't have a campaign. They have a movement. The conservative movement is real. It's strong. They have strong institutional support with financial backing. The Republicans pick up their young at the age of 21 or 22 when they get out of college, and they basically groom them, nurture them, and put them in positions of power. Every 2 years when I was a young kid organizing for the Democratic Party, after the 82 election, what did I have to do? I had to go find a job. After the 84 election, I had to go find a job. After the 86, I had to find a job. I mean, the Republicans, if they lost an election, they picked their kids up, retrained them, got them the new technology, gave them an office, and said, okay, in between elections, you're going to build this movement. We don't do that on the Democratic side. We eat our young. We don't really push people up through the process. It's a very closed system. And let me just say, as somebody who came from the outside, I had to break in the hard way. I had to bring in a folding chair to get a seat at the table. No one gave me a seat. I was scrappy. I was an organizer, and I demanded a seat at the table. And in much the same way that Marcos, talks about, write about every day, the Democratic Party needs a strong backbone, and of course we need a platform, but Howard Dean is absolutely right. We need to compete in all 50 states. We have to rebuild the infrastructure, but more importantly, we need the progressive movement to come back, to reassert itself on the national stage.
And what would
in much
you
the
say?
The same way the conservatives are doing.
Donna, you brought your folding chair, but you got a seat at the table. You've been there for a while now. If you were going to pick up that core of young people and say, come on in, we're going to support you, you're going to work for the Democratic Party, what are they working for? What's the message? What's the core inspiring message that you're planting in their minds, like the Republicans have planted in their acolytes?
I'm a Democrat because I believe this country is a land of opportunity for all people. I believe that this country and the values that we have as Americans are values of not just helping other people, but making sure that we invest in our own, invest in our infrastructure, invest in our education, invest in the future of America. And I do believe that we have a new generation of activists who are ready to take their seats at the table, and they don't have to wait for Nancy Pelosi or Harry Reid to invite them in the room. These elections, these primary elections where an average of 15 to 25 people turn out to vote, just run. Just get involved. Don't complain. Don't mope. Don't groan. Take it over.
Marcos,
what are they waiting for?
We hear it. Marcos Melitzas, are progressive politics a winner in this country? Or is America essentially, we've been told, conservative?
Progressive values are definitely American values. I mean, there's just no doubt about it that progressives are in the mainstream of American thought. If you look up and down the list of issues on Social Security, on health care, on education, the American people are solidly behind the Democratic Party. The one place that Republicans had a big advantage was security. And even that has now been negated as Bush has shown his true colors on the Dubai port deal. So if you look at the polls, it's clear the American people are a progressive people. And one of the reasons we really wrote this book was because we realized after 2000 that we knew Bush was a terrible president. Bush was not terribly popular going into the last election. The American people were with us on almost every single issue, and yet we still lost. And we had to, at that point, we realized, you know what, there's something else here. It's not the issues. We're not losing on message. We're not losing on the issues. We're losing on something else, and we need to find out what that is.
Right now, Mike is calling from Framingham, Massachusetts. Mike, you're on the air.
Tom, good morning, and thank you for taking my call. How's it going?
It's good. What do you think, Mike?
Well, Tom, a couple of things. I think that, first of all, the hammers have fallen over the last few weeks, and the Republicans were standing underneath the hammers that they let down on themselves. But this independent wonders, as we look at about 30% of our population being neither Republican or Democrat, as we look at the future of the politics, both domestically and international in this country, is what do the Democrats have to do? Now, your points, your speakers this morning are talking very much about the strategy, the philosophical and the marketing strategies and tactics.
What else is there besides philosophy and tactics?
Well, I think we've got to suggest to the Democrats that they have got to focus on three or four major points, come together on a strategy and some tactics to rally around those points, as the Republicans certainly have over the last couple of years, understandably, about security, and then pull the party together to go and sell those programs.
Mike, is that good enough, or do you need to have a common understanding of the core Democrat Party impulse? What do you think? Republicans, small government, low taxes. Does the Democrats have an equivalent? Are they proud to shout it?
Well, the Republicans, as one of your speakers has already said, are very focused from bringing up young folks and grooming them within the party. I think, though, that we have got to say these are the social values, and within those, the Democrats have got to be able to say these are the three or four important things that we believe in. And not just let the Republicans, including the president yesterday, sit back and say, oh, well, we've got the better idea. We've got the Democrats have got to come up with ideas that are going to coalesce the Democrats and be attractive to independent voters. And in that regard, there are more of those folks out there than there are registered Republicans.
Voters like you. Mike, thanks for your call. Donna, what about it? Do the Democrats have their three or four big ideas they're going to sell this year, this fall, or not?
I think what Democrats are saying now is that we want to have an open, honest, and fair government. We want real security that starts at our borders. We want opportunity and decency for all people. I think it's not just our ideas. I think Marcos is absolutely right. The American people agree with us on the issues, the vision that we have for the country, the fact that, you know, the last time we had a Democratic president, we managed to balance the budget and created a surplus. But it's how we market our ideas and who we market those ideas to. So We need both. We need good, strong ideas, but we need credible candidates who can go out there and tell the American people the story, rally them to our cause, and then turn them out on Election Day.
Marcos Melitzas, are you so sure that the American people, as Donna says, stand with the Democrats, agree on the Democrat vision? If that's the case, why have Republicans done so well for 10 years?
Because, you know, I hate to keep coming back to this issue, but it's the machine. I mean, if you look at the polls, it's very, very obvious and very clear that the American people are with us on the majority of issues. And in 2004, John Kerry won the independent vote. First time a presidential candidate won the independent vote, lost the election. Republicans are extremely good at rallying their base, at really using those wedge issues and those issues that motivate their voters to turn out and vote. Contrast that with the Democrats. I mean, right now you have the Republicans pushing another flag-burning amendment. They're pushing more anti-gay initiatives. Mm. Now the Democrats have an opportunity to rally their troops and to get behind maybe Russ Feingold's censure resolution to show the base of the Democratic Party that Democrats actually do have a spine, that they do stand for something, that they won't let this administration get away with lying and illegal acts. And they run and hide. And Nancy Pelosi says in an interview that why would Feingold want to roil the waters? Why is he, when we've got it so good right now with Republicans self imploding? And to me, it's a difference between having people vote for Democrats because they want to vote for Democrats, and voting for Democrats because they're voting against Republicans. And I don't think that many people vote against another party. I think they want to vote for something.
Donna Brazil, are Democrats hiding out and just hoping to win off the Republicans' troubles here? President's poll numbers well below 40%, very low now. Is it enough to sit there and catch the fruit as it falls?
No, let me tell you, there are too many strategic flaws in our electoral process and system. If Democrats are waiting for the Republican, for the wheels to, you know, to essentially run us off the cliff, I'm sorry, that's not going to win elections. We need to go out there, tell people what we stand for, believe in who we are, believe in our values, stop running away from our values as Democrats, and confront these Republicans on the political landscape that they've created. I do believe if the American people understood what we believed and what we stood for, Democrats would not only win in November, we would win really big this fall.
But are they doing that right now? Or is the kind of wink belief on Capitol Hill that, you know, hey, the GOP's in trouble, let's just sit here and catch the fly ball?
You know, I'm a student of the civil rights movement. I mean, you don't win campaigns by rallying around legislation. You just don't. You win campaigns by giving people something bigger than themselves, another direction. If we tell the American people what we would do differently in 2007 and where we would take this country, I think they will rally around us. But if we're trying to rally them with, you know, six or seven leaders on the Hill, and God knows I respect all of them because they're putting in their time and they're public servants, but we got to tell the American people, we got to ignite a fire because people want to take this country in a different direction. They're tired of the Republican majority. They're tired of this president misleading them. They want change.
Dave's calling from Shepherdstown, West Virginia. Hi, Dave. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hi, everybody. How you doing?
We're well. What do you think, Dave?
I think that the only viable strategy for the Democrats to rally their base and to beat the Republicans in the upcoming elections is to identify who the Republican Party is and has become. I think it would behoove most Democrats to take a listen to the 700 Club and listen to the media messages that these people send out and subscribe to, and try and get an idea of who you're up against, because these are not political animals. These are ideological animals. Sometimes people who embrace pretty bizarre religious, quasi-religious concept.
But Dave, every party's got ideology, and the Republicans aren't hiding those messages. For heaven's sakes, they're broadcasting them. So maybe those are winners.
The point I'm speaking to is how a Democrat would beat a Republican in an election. And the first thing you have to do is identify your enemy. And this is a fight. Make no mistake about it. It's not a ping pong match. So if you take the time to listen to the messages these people spread and communicate with, I think you'll get a handle on who it is we're up against. And this is not a battle of intellectual points or decisions that are going to be made on the basis of some sort of extended study and intellectual understanding of what the issues are.
It's a gut fight. We can see that. And the question in part is, you know, do the Democrats have a handle on that end of the competition. Let's hear from Knoxville, Tennessee, and Terry. Terry, you're on the air.
Yeah, I would just, let me just say, I'm a pro-life Democrat that has nowhere to go. If you are opposed to abortion on demand, then as a Democrat, and I would just say, I don't think it affects any of the other issues that Democrats stand for, on the environment, on the economy, on the war. But, you know, if you believe that the abortion issue trumps, then, you know, you just have to sit it out.
How big a deal is that, Terry? It's big for you, but do you think that's the margin of victory or loss for Democrats, that issue?
Certainly, I think that there's a large population of socially progressive Catholics that no longer vote Democratic or feel bad about it.
Yeah, let us pick that up. Donna and Marcos, let's look at both those two callers. It kind of brings up the values issue in part in Terry's observation here. That's been a big stick the Republicans have used. Marcos, do you think it's going to be pulled out again in spite of the troubles they've been having? Will they pull it out over the summer and use it to, you know, pound a victory in November this year?
Of course they're going to pull it out. They just tried to pull it out in South Dakota, where they essentially banned all abortions, even those for victims of rape and incest. So we're seeing this strategy in action. We're seeing it in play. I would argue that there is room for people who are against abortion in the Democratic Party. In fact, Harry Reid, who is a Senate minority leader, he's a Senate Democratic leader, is actually an anti-abortion Democrat.
Yeah, there's room, but it's nothing like the Democratic Party position, just the opposite, right?
No, absolutely not. I mean, if that's the issue that trumps all issues, then clearly Democrats are a party that values the privacy of women, and it should be. And it depends on each person to really make that decision based on what values they value most, I guess. But if they want a party that actually can govern, that looks at reality and doesn't have ideology trump facts and science and common sense, then the Democratic Party is the party to go.
Donna, what about it? Terry asks about this values issue of abortion. Our caller Dave in West Virginia says it's a gut fight. Are the Democrats in a position to win on these gut level values issues that have been so powerfully emotive in recent elections?
Yes, if we explain to the American people why we stand for the values that we fight for. The Democratic Party is opposed to quotas. I'm black, and yet I stand with the Democratic Party because I know this party believes in equal opportunity and equal access, and that every American should have the same opportunities. So I don't think we should just go around and cherry pick what issues that, you know, the Democrats is this way or that way. I'm a strong supporter for the Second Amendment. I come from the South. Mm. My family has always believed in that. But my party, at times, you know, take positions on gun control. Well, is that the break issue for me? Absolutely not. You got to look at the whole picture, not just, you know, parts of it. And I think overall, this party has been the party of opportunity, of hope, and given the American people, you know, the chance to become who we really are and not limit us because of some particular stance that we've taken on this issue or that issue. I would hope that the call in Tennessee, and God bless the people of Tennessee, they just went through a tremendous storm. And I hope they recover well, because as a Gulf Coast resident, and with my 90% of my family dispersed, I'm glad the Democrats are standing up for the victims of Katrina, standing up to make sure that this country is safe and secure.
Donna, I know we've got to let you go. Your bottom line odds: Democrats need 15 seats in the House, 6 in the Senate. Will they take both, either? How do you read it?
You know, when it comes to the Senate, we need to go back to what we did in 1986 when we rallied people across the country and we took back the Senate. We have enough seats in play to take the Senate. I feel good about our chances of retaining the seats that we currently control in Florida, Nebraska. If we can continue to have the strong support in Minnesota, that's an open seat, and help power forward in Tennessee, win back Maryland. I do believe that we can win control. The Republicans have a lot of problems on their hand. Conrad Burns is going to be the next Tom DeLay in Montana. that's a seat that we should put in play for the Democratic Party. And in the House, I feel very comfortable with 30 open seats, with some incredible candidates across the country. Yes, this is going to be a good, strong Democratic year.
Donna Brazil, joining us from Washington, ran Gore Lieberman in 2000. Donna, thanks very much for being with us.
And thank Marcos and all of the Net Roots for just pushing us and jolting the Democratic Party and standing up and fighting, even though I know sometimes they even get on my nerves. But I love them because they're activists and because they believe in their values. And God bless you, sir.
That's why we're here.
There it is. Sunshine and light all over. Donna Brazil, thanks for being with us. I want to turn to Tampa, Florida, if I may, and David Beatty, a Democratic pollster, president of the research firm Beatty, Hamilton & Staff, the oldest partisan polling firm in the country. David Beatty, thanks for being with us.
Glad to be here. Thank you kindly. It's Hamilton, Beatty & Staff. Bill comes first.
Oh, excuse me. Thank you. Tell us what the polls say. Can the Democrats do it? How's it look?
Well, there's clearly a lot of disenchantment in the country with Republicans, but there's also a real sense that Democrats don't have the answers, as the callers and Marcos and Don have all mentioned too. There's a real anti-partisan mood, and what voters really want is they just want things to work. I think they're tired of partisanship, and they're tired of kind of what they see as the infighting, particularly in Washington, and are really looking for just someone to say, this is what we're going to do, we're going to do it easily, and we're going to do it without fighting, because there's a lot of things that voters think need to be accomplished and dealt with, such as health care, such as making the country more secure, and such as looking at our national debt and being ready to invest for the future, not just kind of spend all our resources today.
Does that mean that ideas and messaging at the big, huge level is secondary this year? It's about what we're going to do down and dirty, practical?
Well, I think that those go hand in hand, but one of the parts of the discussion that's been missing is the importance of the candidates. That Tip O'Neill was one of our clients and always preached that all politics is local. And that is as important today as in the past. And voters don't vote for a party at the national level. They end up voting for local candidates. And it's going to be those candidates articulating what they're going to do and how they fit their districts that are going to be able to move the country forward. And be able to move the debate forward. Republicans really have run a national campaign, and at the national level, they can be tied back to a lot of problems. But to win, Democrats need to focus on the local candidacies to be able to articulate what they're going to do different and how that's going to impact the lives of people in local areas, not just nationally.
Marcos, do you agree? I've heard it interpreted just the other way, that the Democrats need to make it national because a lot of the big problems are national. President Bush's poll numbers are national. Local or national for victory?
I absolutely disagree. In fact, what we've seen the last two cycles, if not the last three cycles, is Democrats trying to localize the congressional races while the Republicans were nationalizing them around issues like security and flag burning and heating gays and that sort of thing. So now we have an opportunity to really, really hit them hard on the national issues, on the fact that they have been absolute miserable failures in governing the nation. And that should be the key. I mean, at the end of the day, people are really disenchanted with what's happening in D.C., and that's what we need to take advantage of.
Right now, Stone's calling from Westminster, Maryland. Hi, Stone. You're on the air.
Hi. My problem is, as I say with the Democrats, is that the Republicans run the Democrats' agenda and that the Democrats only react to the Republicans, the issues that the Republicans have pushed.
Why is that? What do you think that is?
I don't know anymore. It seems like they rely on polls far too much, and they don't think about changing how people think, which would change the poll results. They don't set their own agenda. There's beginning of talk of war with Iran in the late summer and early fall, and if the Democrats don't pursue censorship against Bush, many more people could die, but the Democrats are posturing.
You say pursue like the censure, as Russ Feingold has raised.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Because Bush right now has basically carte blanche in anything that he wants to do. Even though they're talking about him being a lame duck, he still is setting the agenda and doing whatever he wants to do.
Stone, let us look at that dynamic you're describing. Marcos Melitzas, you write, Democratic Party is unsure of itself, lacking the expression of any core principles, devoid of any institutional machinery. Democrats have utterly failed to offer a compelling alternative to Bush and his Republican acolytes, content to wait for the Republicans to self-destruct so they can become the default option. Stone says, yeah, they're reactive. Is that still true, and why?
Absolutely true. It's a function, one of the pollsters and the consultants in D.C. that caution these Democrats from taking any courageous stance. I think part of that may be historical and based on this machine. I mean, if you were a Democrat and took a courageous position, you were guaranteed a serious, serious beating from this right-wing noise machine from Fox News and Rush Limbaugh and the like. And there was no partisan liberal media on the left to either support that candidate or push back against his onslaught. That's changing. The blogs are starting to provide that. We have Air America and Ed Schultz, and we're growing a partisan liberal media. It's very, very tiny.
Is that what you mean by net roots in your book's title?
Absolutely. Netroots is the network of online activists. So they could be on blogs, they could be on MoveOn, on any number of sites. So that's what Netroots is. And it's our ability to create a sort of noise machine, kind of replicate what the Republicans did with AM radio, and do that on the left and support people like, say, Russ Feingold when he does make a courageous stance on something like censorship.
But let me ask you, you know, the conventional wisdom was that the online activists, maybe like you, would run the Democratic Party right over a liberal cliff, that they were, you know, not in the mainstream.
It's sure, people will say that. And there's a reason our book is called Crashing the Gate. Mm-hmm. It's because there is very much opposition to a lot of what we're doing. I was very much intrigued. The New York Times reviewed our book. They put Peter Beinart to review it. He's a Beltway insider, wrote
the
for
New Republic.
Randy,
yep.
New Republic. A year ago, he called for the expulsion of people like me and MoveOn folk from the Democratic Party. He was assigned to review the book. I expected an absolute trashing. In fact, it was a fairly positive review. There was grudging respect. And I think there's an understanding now that we're not these far leftist extremists that they pretend that we used to be, that we're actually very much committed activists and that we have the best interests of the party in mind, and that we have a plan that actually makes a lot of sense and could push the Republicans out of power, put the Democrats in power.
David Beatty, how do you see it? Our caller Stone says the Democrats look and sound reactive. Do the polls show that to you? And if the Dems stood up with their core message and really, you know, made a noise about it, is it a winner?
Well, I think that it's clear that Democrats are seen as lacking a spine, as not fighting for what they believe in. And part of the problem that we face in this election is there's great dissatisfaction with Republicans, Republican policies, and Republican priorities at the national level, but there's not an articulation of an alternative. And that's what voters are really looking for, is an alternative that they can believe in, that they can see starting to get results. So there really is this sense that there's dissatisfaction, but Democrats haven't proven that they're willing to fight for what they believe in. And I think that's part of what is happening and changing in politics for Democrats in a very good way.
So there's a bad situation on a lot of fronts, but does the country, a majority, share what the Democrats believe in? Does the majority want to vote for fighting for the Democrat vision?
Well, it's voting for the candidates that are going to talk about opportunity, talk about investment, innovation in the future. And that's one of the great divides, is the focus on the future or the past. And America really is an optimistic and future-oriented country,
mm-hmm.
and we need to articulate that vision and that direction, and it's going to be up to the candidates to do that.
Let's turn to Columbia, South Carolina. Dennis is calling. Hi, Dennis. You're on the air.
Thank you. One of your authors has a book entitled Crashing the Gate,
mm-hmm.
and let's talk about the pearly gates and how the Republicans have appeared to commandeer God and turn that into a major voting issue, and what the Democrats propose to do about it.
Well said. Marcos, what about it?
It's clearly one of these problems where they've actually politicized. I mean, one of the things that Republicans do and the conservatives have done fairly well is they politicize everything. They politicize religion. They politicize Christmas. They politicize science. Nothing is beyond the bounds of politics. And religion, obviously, should be one of those things that is beyond politics, but it obviously is not anymore. There is a religious left. It's growing. It's realizing that its values, those Christian values that they believe in very strongly, are under attack by these people who have commandeered their religion and are fighting back. There's a great book by a reverend named Jim Wallis called God's Politics, and it's absolutely one of the best books I've read in a long time. It talks about exactly this issue and talks about how the Bible is a very, very progressive document, and that true Christians really should be progressives.
But you know where Wallace stands. It's hardly in the big belly of those Christian fundamentalist votes. I mean, that's just not where it is. If you're with Jim Wallace, if that's where you're looking for your votes, how many are you going to find there?
The religious left is actually the denominations that are essentially allied, that are very progressive-minded, are actually fairly large. They have not been politicized because this should be one of those areas in life that is not, that is beyond politics. But they're starting to realize that their faith is being hijacked by these Christian coalition types, these religious right-wingers. And they're starting to organize and starting to fight back. Now, one thing to keep in mind with all of this that we're talking about is it took the Republicans 30 years to build their machine and their movement to the point where they're very, very dominant in America today. We've just really started looking at building our infrastructure about 2 years ago. And so this is a long-term process. I mean, the religious left is organizing. They're not going to be able to match the religious right for maybe 10 years, but they're going to get there.
David Beatty, what do the polls say? Marcos Melitza says religion should be beyond politics. A lot of Americans have said, were interpreted as having said in 2004, we want religious values in our political life. I mean, you can hear that every day and minute of the week. What do the polls say about the balance there?
Well, voters are very divided on it. What they want is a government that follows some core set of principles. And whether they are conservative Christians or progressive Christians, there's a core set of values of treating others as you want to be treated that is very much shared. And the politicized religion of the Christian coalition, I think, is actually fracturing some Christian conservative denominations and individuals from the political nature that they've driven their churches to. Because there is this sense that government should be fair, and the political rhetoric is a much harsher God than much of the Bible preaches.
Crystal's calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hi, Crystal. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm a PhD student in sociology. Mm-hmm. I'm African-American, so mm-hmm. I pretty much buy into the core ideas, as I've heard articulated by members of the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the main issues that sociologists and Democrats have in common is the fact that it's hard to explain why we need to stand up for opportunity or building opportunity. It butts up against the American ideology of you can make it here, we're already the land of opportunity, and to just throw it out there that, yeah, we stand for opportunity, what does that mean? That doesn't even get me excited.
I think Republicans believe they own that word, opportunity.
Right, they think they own it, and apparently they have the machinery to act as if they do. One thing I just want to respond to is I think that Democrats don't have to wait around for machinery. I mean, Clinton won a few years ago. I guess that machinery wasn't in place then. I think what you need is a charismatic leader, someone who is likable, someone who appears to be alive when he's on television or she's on television, and someone who can get people fired up about the future, give them hope and optimism, and not wait around for, you know, hoping that criticizing Republicans is going to somehow get a Democrat into the White House, because I think people are not stupid, and people are going to be resentful, feeling as though their vote is being taken for granted without articulating a message and explaining why we should believe in it.
Crystal, I want to probe in on this, where you're going with this notion of opportunity. Are you saying that the Democrats should put that not in positive terms but negative terms? Are you saying they should say we don't have equal opportunity? Is that the point of emphasis you're looking for?
Well, you know, I'm not a political scientist, so I don't know the best way to market that. I don't know the best strategy to take, but I think they have to do something to get people to buy into the idea that something needs to be done to increase opportunity in America, because I think a lot of Republicans, a lot of conservatives don't think that there's a problem in the way that Democrats do. So you throw out the word opportunity, and I don't think that's going to get people on the other side to suddenly jump on our team.
Yeah, Crystal, thanks very much for your call. Marcos, what about it? The issue of opportunity, equality, inequality, the median income is barely budging. You know, it's a rich have gotten richer era, but is that a political seller in this country?
Let me go back to the point about Clinton and, you know, the caller wishing there were more Clintons. I mean, Clinton was an extraordinarily talented politician. He's once in a generation, and we can't expect that sort of politician to be around for us every cycle. Not to mention that he never won 50% of the popular vote in any election. He never won a majority of the American vote of the American public who voted in those elections. That's pretty stark because he was so talented. He could not get 50% plus one. The last time Democrats got 50% plus one was 1976. So we're going to go on 32 years without being able to gain a majority of the American public. So that's pretty stark. As far as the opportunity, this is where the machine really, really hurts us, because they have the ability to take values. You know, say they are going to play with the word opportunity. They would run it through the think tanks. They would find ways. They would find policies that would play off that word. They would find their language spinmeisters that can really frame those words in ways that really are marketable to the American people, and we don't have that. So we have the value. Now, how does that value translate into marketing? How does that value translate into actual legislation? Those are the big questions, and we lack the machinery and the institutions to really churn out that kind of product.
But you're talking about a building of infrastructure that, if I get you right, and Peter Beinart looks at this, as you say, you're describing a parallel between the Republicans. They had Barry Goldwater in the 60s. They spent the 70s and then into the 80s building this infrastructure. Are you saying, Marcos Melitzas, that the Democrats then are decades away from returning because it's going to take that long to build the noise machine?
I think we're decades from competing on an even playing field. I think we can win today based on Republican missteps. And they're giving us, God knows, they're giving us a lot of ammunition to work with. But if they were competent, I don't think we stand a chance. And the issue is, when can we actually compete with them on an even level playing field? And I think that's about 10 to 15 years away.
That's a long time. Joey's calling from Kenmore, New York. Hi, Joey. You're on the air.
Oh, yeah. My point is, I used to be a Democrat,
mm-hmm.
and in the late 80s, I became a Republican, so I thought maybe I could put some insight into where the Democratic Party left me.
Yeah, why did you shift, Joey?
Yeah, I think they were really not communicating what they believed in. They talk a lot about policies and strategies and marketing, and never really got down to the essence of what people believe in, and I think people have strong beliefs in this country. And, you know, when you had Donna Brazile on earlier,
mm-hmm.
I think you asked her a couple of times,
yep.
Well, what do you believe in? And I still didn't hear the answer. I think I was listening pretty carefully. When they ask a Democrat that, I listen pretty carefully to see if I've made a misstep in my past.
Well, she said opportunity, fairness. Do those start to punch your buttons or not?
A lot
investment
of
in the future.
Investment in the future? Is that yeah. visceral enough, Joey?
I think things that Republicans would say, yeah. Put a check mark next to that for me, too.
So why does it leave you on the GOP side?
Well, because those are really obscure things. We're going to say, yeah, of course we're for opportunity. Well, of course we're for fairness. Well, absolutely. But when you get right down to the nitty-gritty, when you look at the details, the devil's in the details, that's where I think they can't win elections. And that's why they can't have, when they're out there on the radio and they're trying to, you know, be eloquent about what their beliefs are, and they really have to speak about their beliefs, that's when it really separates, and that's when people say, I don't think so. I think I'm going to vote for the other side.
Joey, our time's running down, but we appreciate your call. David Beatty, let me ask you, in this year, Marcos is pointing to a big future, but in this year, is it enough for the Democrats to kind of ride in the Republicans' backdraft? They've got a lot of problems on their plate right now. Might that lead to a change in control of one or both houses of Congress, or do they have to step up with the kind of big idea that our caller's looking for there?
Well, I think it's a combination of both. I think the gap's going to be narrowed by identifying and holding Republicans accountable for the real national problems. But the flip side is being able to offer those local solutions. I think that part of the reason that I emphasize local solutions so much is there isn't a national infrastructure to do it. So an individual candidate has to do that credibly on their own. But it's a tough road to hoe, but there are aspects like fairness, that there's a different set of rules that it appears some people are playing by in our society that others don't get to play by, that are real concerns for the society. And there's a real chance to pick up, I think, a significant number of seats. I'm not sure if it's enough to take back both the House and Senate.
So, Marcos Melitzas, we heard Donna Brazile give her swan song before. What's yours? You've got a minute here. If you're making an appeal from your corner of the political spectrum to the American voter on behalf of the Democratic Party, what do you say?
Well, I would say that it's blatantly obvious at this point that Republicans will not govern based on reality. They'll govern based on their ideology, even if it doesn't match reality. So we have a party that has proven itself the ability to govern. We had Bill Clinton. We had budget surpluses. We were paying down the debt. We had peace and prosperity. And we fought a war in Kosovo and in Yugoslavia that ended successfully. We did not lose a single soldier. Now look at what's happening now. We have a party that can govern. We have a party that cannot govern. The choice to me is fairly obvious.
Ladies and gentlemen, there's the word. Marcos Melitzas of the Daily Coast, co-author of Crashing the Gate, thank you very much for being with us this hour. And David Beatty in Tampa, Florida, Democratic pollster at Hamilton Beatty and Staff, thanks very much for joining us, Mr. Beatty.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.